Call the Judiciary Committee meeting to order. With me in committee today is Senator Olson, Senator Dyson, and Chairman Coghill. The other two should be here shortly. So today, the order that I want to go in is we have some confirmation hearings today. We have one for the Board of Governors, one for Commission on Judicial Conduct. The intention is to have HDR 4 brought before the committee, introduced today. We'll maybe have a few questions on HB 69, which is exempt firearms from federal regulation. But my intention is to hold that for public testimony till Wednesday. I promised I would give some testimony time to Senate Joint Resolution Number 9, Constitutional Amendment on Education Funding, in the public hearing today. So we'll do those in order. Do I have any of the confirmation people that have called in yet? All right. So is Adam Trombley online?
Yes, I'm here.
Adam, thanks for taking time to call into the committee, and thanks for taking the time to take the nomination to Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar Association. Why don't you just introduce yourself and give us a little bit of your reason for going ahead and putting your name in for this particular board?
Sure. Well, my name's Adam Trombley. I'm currently elected to the Anchorage Assembly. I represent East Anchorage. And one of the main reasons is you know, I've had the opportunity to serve on the Budget Advisory Commission. I was appointed by Mayor Sullivan to that. And I enjoyed doing that before I was elected. And so I kind of wanted to get some experience on the state level. And being that I do represent a large constituency of Alaska Natives, I thought it would be important to understand not just law here in Anchorage, but also what goes on in the Bush area, because we do have a, for lack of a better term, kind of a migration of Native Alaskans that come into Anchorage. And I figured this would help broaden my horizons as far as what challenges are out there in the rural areas that come into Anchorage, and what better way to understand that than through the legal system that deals with not just writing laws, but defending and prosecuting situations out there, and what that means for my constituency basis. So I said it would help broaden my horizons and help better serve the public that I represent.
First of all, thank you. And have you had a chance to attend any of the board meetings of the Bar Association yet? I mean, the governor.
Yes, sir. I attended, I think it was in January that I was able to attend the first meeting.
Any questions for Mr. Trombley? One of the nice things about this committee is if we do have questions, we get to ask them. If not, you get a free ride. So at this point, first of all, thank you for serving in your local area from one who enjoys public service, and thank you for being willing to serve on the Board of Governors.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
If there's no other further comment, what I'll do is I'll go on to the next one, and I'll take a motion for both people coming up before us today. So thank you, Adam, and we're going to move on next then to Amy Mead. Is it Amy Gerton Mead?
Amy Mead's fine, yes.
Okay, and on for the Commission on Judicial Conduct.
Yes.
Thank you very much for being willing to serve, and why don't you go ahead and not only give us your name for the record for those recording, but why you would choose to serve on this board commission.
Certainly. My name is Amy Mead. I am an attorney here in Juneau. I put my name in originally because I believe we're all responsible to volunteer our time to the community and to our profession when we're able. I am very active personally with my kids' schooling. When I learned about the commission from a judge I'd practiced in front of pretty much since becoming a lawyer in Southeast, I thought the subject matter was very interesting, but more importantly that it served a really important role in creating and maintaining a strong judiciary and towards fostering public trust in that judiciary. So when the opportunity presented itself, I was applied and was very honored to be asked to participate. I've attended two meetings and have very much enjoyed it.
Amy, thank you for being willing to serve. We've been joined by Senator McGuire. What we're doing, Senator McGuire, is we're talking to Amy Mead, who has been nominated to the Commission on Judicial Conduct. Amy, you've attended two meetings. What are some of the things that were either new or surprising to you in that particular commission?
I've been enjoying the slight different nuances between, you know, ethics as it applies to attorneys versus ethics as it applies to the judiciary, and just the analysis of the different types of cases that come between us, and hearing from all the other members of the commission and how everyone has, you know, looks at it a little bit differently. It's been very eye-opening for me.
Are there any questions for Amy? Senator Dyson has a question, Amy.
Yeah. Thank you, Amy, for being willing to serve. This is not a test question. What are the ethical concerns that the commission ought to be paying attention to, or you're concerned about it when it comes to unethical judicial conduct?
Yeah, I haven't been concerned. I'm very proud of our judiciary. The judges that I've come in contact since I've been practicing have been nothing but spectacular. I think that the one issue that I feel like I pay most attention to, or that I see come up, is just when a judge is maybe not aware of how his or her behavior or decisions are coming across to unrepresented parties or parties who do not have a lot of contact with the court, and just being very careful about how what an attorney may understand as just a normal course of business might come across differently to someone who doesn't have that type of experience.
Senator Dyson?
Yeah, I appreciate that. A great concern of mine is the underrepresented indigent. I have been with associates half a dozen times where they got a public defender, and the first time they met the defender was in the lobby outside the courtroom, and the public defender had six or eight folders under his arm, and it seemed to me that we could do better in that regard, and as time goes on, I'd enjoy your thoughts on that one. I've always been pretty proud of our state in that we've had very few accusations of police brutality, cops on the take, and that the treatment of prisoners that are incarcerated has been pretty good. And I've not heard of judges conduct being such that it is known to have affected their judgment. In other professions, people on the boards that monitor those have been subject to pressure, i.e. doctors on the medical board who do their job of exposing a bad player, and then they get less referrals and so on and so forth. Is there any sense that you, as a practicing attorney, would be under any pressure to discipline a judge before whom you might have to appear sometime?
I don't feel anything like that.
Good for you.
I don't see that being a problem, no.
Yeah, good. And thank you for being willing to serve and expose yourself anyways to that, perhaps, pressure. Thank you.
Amy, thank you very much for taking time to come before our committee. Is there any other discussion? Amy, I'll let you get back to your life, and thank you for being willing to serve on the Commission on Judicial Conduct. And with that, what I'd like to do is take a motion to recommend these to the full body, or at least pass them on to the full body for recommendation.
So, Mr. Chairman, I move and ask unanimous consent that the name of Amy Girton Mead be moved forward from the Judiciary Committee to the full body with individual recommendations for a position on the Commission on Judicial Conduct.
Any objection? Any comment? All right. Why don't you also make the motion for Adam Trombley, Board of Governors?
Yes. And I move, Mr. Chairman, ask unanimous consent that the name of Adam Trombley be moved on with individual recommendations from the Judiciary Committee onto the full body for the position of the Board of Governors.
Any objection to that? So, and that doesn't imply a lot of support, although I didn't hear any objection. We'll have that for you to sign up. So before you leave the committee today, we'll have you sign that recommendation to the full body. Thank you, Adam and Amy. Next, I want to bring up House Joint Resolution Number 4, and we have with us Representative Millett, who is going to introduce it. And my intention today is to bring it before us for you to kind of consider it. And my intention is not to move it today, but to get us familiar with it. So, House Joint Resolution Number 4, Representative Millett.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Sharice Millett. I represent House District 4 in Anchorage. Before you, you have House Joint Resolution 4, which is a resolution urging the President of the United States not to issue executive orders, actions on gun control or any type of magazines or ammunition. Recently, we've had some tragedies in Newtown, Connecticut, Aurora. We've also had some here in Alaska and Bethel. While we understand that those are horrible, and our heart goes out to those people and those Americans that have been, their lives have been taken, we don't think that the action of gun control is going to mitigate any of those actions. What we would like, though, is we would like to be able to, as a state, make our own gun regulations, make our own gun laws, and make sure that Alaskans, who are unique in their ownership of guns, not only do they have them for personal protection, but they also use them to subsist. So any action that the President or Congress could take at this point in time could limit Alaskans' abilities to provide food for themselves, to provide protection for themselves. And so if you read the resolution, there's the 23 actions or executive orders, and we're not certain what they actually are and what type of authorization they hold, because the President was very unique in how he issued his recommendations and orders. But you'll see, we were all recently down in Washington, D.C., and the amount of gun legislation that's passing through the U.S. Congress right now is amazing to me, that someone from Washington, D.C. or from New York City could regulate guns and would think it would be appropriate and right for that action to take place in our state, which is incredibly unique. With that, Chairman Coghill, I would hope that you would stand with me for not only the Second Amendment right, but also for the Ninth and Tenth Amendments, where states have rights to dictate what laws fit their states in particular, especially when it comes to gun control and ammunition control. These are things that we are best able to do on a state level rather than a national level where one size does not fit all.
Thank you, Representative Millett. And welcome to Senator Wilkowski's committee. That rounds out our committee. I have a couple questions for you. Is 23 the right number? I heard some debate from the other body, and I just wanted to make sure we get that nailed down.
Through the chair, yes, it was 23, and it started out by saying executive actions, and then it came out, you should have in your packet, a recommendation plan, which deals with some things that are reasonable and some things that aren't reasonable, but again, some of the implications of what they want to do on a national level do not fit, you know, our lifestyles here in Alaska. There's some things on the mental health issues. While I understand that most violent offenders and most people that have had mass shootings do have some type of mental issue, one of the things that I worry about, and I spoke about this on the House floor, is at what level do you stop people with a mental illness from owning a gun? Is it someone that took Prozac because they lost a baby? Is it a woman who lost their husband in war and needed some type of psychological appointments? I mean, where does that lie? And so my concerns on, I believe that we do need to increase our mental health awareness, but we also need to be very careful because if you indict someone and tell them they can't own a gun because they may or may not have a mental illness, they're less likely to report or get help for that mental illness. And so those are some of my fears with the recommendations that came out from the President and his and Vice President Biden. Is I think that those issues are best done on a statewide level rather than a national level where the things that they're offering up in here just don't fit Alaska.
Right. And that actually helped answer a couple of the questions I had also. I think most of us know how to get a hold of a executive order, but an executive action or recommendation may too be two very difficult things to get a hold of. Has that been your experience then?
Through the chair, yes, it actually has. To get a straight answer on what an executive order is, an executive order is very different than an executive action, and they don't carry the same weight as, the President can issue an executive order at any time, but the way that the recommendations, the way that he brought out these 23 executive actions, we weren't clear if actions carry the same weight as executive orders, and it's been very unclear not only to our state but other states on exactly what the President did do. It's come down to we understand it, and I've tried to get a clear answer, is that they're now just recommendations.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you. I just want to thank the bill sponsor for this. I think it's excellent legislation, and I think it's just it's another case of just absurd overreach. And when you look at the facts in Newtown, it becomes even more interesting because you have a gunman who had been, in fact, denied an application for a gun, so he had been denied. And part of the reason he was denied is because the gun dealer suspected him to be off. Something was off. And so whether he was certified as mentally ill or not, that gun dealer went through the appropriate checks, at least in his mind, and said, I'm not going to sell him a gun. And so it's interesting now that you have all these people in Washington investigating mentally ill and people and their access to weapons when this person didn't actually have a weapon, wasn't licensed to have a weapon, in fact took his mother's. And it just is another example of how people don't look at, they look at a tragedy and they want to try to fix it, but they don't look at cause and effect in what I consider to be the right way. I've said this before and I'll say it again, as a mother of a son in public school, what I'd like to do is have more of the trained personnel that are there armed. That's what I like. And what I think about my state is that you don't see these kinds of tragedies because they know that Alaskans have the right to conceal carry. And so when you look at these major tragedies, what you're looking at is human beings that want that effect for whatever the sick reason is of going into a movie theater or going into a school where young children are, where they know people are unarmed and they can literally count the bodies. And I think it is so sick and so wrong. And that's, we have Second Amendment rights, and I am so proud of you for carrying this, and we just have to stand up every chance we get to the federal government and for them to recognize maybe they do it a different way and maybe it does work in other places. I would submit that it probably doesn't necessarily work better there either, but I appreciate you standing up for Alaskans.
Thank you.
Senator Dyson?
Yeah. You're right to question what was originally called executive order. In fact, this federal administration called it that for 2 weeks and then backed down to said it was a executive action, I think. And the only difference, I think, is an executive order appears in a congressional record and the rest of it, the other does not. But you're right to be worried about it. I also worry about the government deciding who is mentally fit. And I sure don't want that centralized. And as you probably know, that was one of the first things Hitler did when he seized power in, 33, mm-hmm. was to, quote, eliminate many of the, quote, mentally defective in the country. And then he went through the homosexual community and mm-hmm. so on. So you're very right to want to limit what our government can do to us. And that really wasn't a question. Apologize.
Through the chair, thank you. I would believe that some people might think that legislators are mentally unfit. So, I mean, in that case, you know, we have to be extremely careful on who we limit to have the power to own a gun.
Present company accepted.
Present company accepted.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this, so I'm just trying to understand this, that you want rescission of all 23 executive orders? Is that what you're seeking?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that's exactly what I'm asking. I'm asking the president not to issue executive orders, actions, or recommendations on gun control for the state of Alaska. Absolutely.
And I would agree that there shouldn't be any executive orders on gun control. And I'm just wondering, I haven't read the 23 executive orders. Somebody gave me a list that's got them, and some of them seem overboard, but some of them seem to me, just at first glance, like they may not be so unreasonable. For instance, one says, provide incentives for schools to hire school resource officers. Is that one that you disagree with?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it's not whether I agree with them or disagree with them. It's the fact
that we're urging to rescind them. So you think we should not be, you think it was wrong for the president to say we should be providing incentives for schools to hire school resource officers. Do you think that violates the Second Amendment somehow?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, again, this resolution is about sending a message to Washington, D.C. that while some of them may be, in theory, realistic and something that we can do, that's not Congress and the president's job. It's the state of Alaska's job to do that. And while we may want to adopt that recommendation, we might not want to adopt it exactly the way it's written. I mean, what's the cost associated with that? What's the cost associated? How will it affect rural schools? You can look at every single one of those executive actions, and they are sound bites, and but taking them and applying them realistically, what does that mean? That means that the federal government is going to send out, just like they did with No Child Left Behind. We all thought it was a great, great, great action. It sounded perfect on the front. No Child Left Behind. But we found out that did not work in the state of Alaska. So those things, while I may agree with some of them and disagree with them, I don't think it's the federal government's job to tell Alaska when, how, where to use guns and what we should be doing. It's our right to do that.
I agree, but that one has nothing to do with guns. That's about hiring school resource officers. There's another one, Mr. Chair. Launch a national dialogue led by Secretaries Sebelius and Duncan on mental health. You think that's something wrong with that?
Again, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I there's going to be things that I agree with and I don't agree with, but trying to send the message in the resolution, okay, is that the federal government should not be sending out a one-size-fits-all package for the states to implement gun regulations. And you're right, it doesn't have anything to do with gun regulations and mental health. We should all be looking at mental health, but do we need the president to tell us that every day what the state of Alaska needs to be doing? Isn't that something that you think that we should be doing on a state level?
Launching a national dialogue led by secretaries of,
just for what it's worth,
and Duncan on
Senator,
mental health.
I was just going to bring a point to this. Both the resolves go right to the keep and bear arms. So if there's a problem on the 23 executive orders, it certainly doesn't show up in the resolve. So
it says it in the title, Mr. Chair, urging the President of the United States to rescind 23 executive orders.
Yeah, I understand.
That's
that.
Where I'm getting that from. Yeah. So that's why I'm trying to clarify. I mean, if there's things in here that we agree with, personally, I think a national dialogue on mental health is a good thing. Personally, I think incentivizing schools to hire school resource officers is a good thing. There's another one, develop model emergency response plans for schools, houses of worship, and institutions of higher education. I think that's a good thing. I think probably 99, if not 100% of Alaskans would agree with that. And yet we're urging the president not to do that. We're urging him to rescind that. I mean, if we're to have any credibility at all, you don't just say, blanket, cancel them all, they're all terrible. Don't you say, some are good, some are bad. I agree with you on the Second Amendment ones. Let's get rid of those. But if there's ones in here that are good, shouldn't we agree? Hey, these are good things. We agree with those?
Through the chair, again, Senator Wilkowski, I don't disagree that there might be some recommendations in there, but again, I will use the example of No Child Left Behind. On the surface, they all sound great. They all sound great. But when it came, when the nuts and the bolts of No Child Left Behind came out, what did we do? We asked for an exemption. And so what we're saying is, you know, there's 23 executive orders that you issued on gun control. Stop.
On gun control.
The whole, through the chair, it is all on gun control. It says it right here on its executive order. Violence reduction, gun action.
It says launch a national dialogue led by Secretary Sebelius and Duncan on mental health. This one says provide incentives for schools to hire school resource officers.
Senator, so if you look at the resolve on the page 3, you'll see that it brings the resolve down to the particular issues related to the regulation of firearms.
Right.
And that's what a resolve is. They bring up the 23 executive orders with regard to those. So the two resolution statements in here deal with the individual right to keep and bear arms and recommendations related to firearms.
And I support that.
And so for those, and I wanted to make sure that the maker of the bill had a chance to defend some of these things. At the same time, really, the statements are really very clear.
Well, and thank you, and through the chair. And I think it's easy when you are looking at a package to point out the things that you agree with and highlight them and then say, well, why would it be included? But I think what the maker of the resolution is saying is that the president brought together a group of people, obviously, to collectively think about gun violence. And as a result of that, out came these executive orders. And the theme is now is time. Now is the time. And out came these recommendations. Now, what the sponsor of the resolution is saying is, thank you very much, but we don't need your recommendations. Send them to somebody else. If in Alaska, we would like to continue to chart our own destiny. And if we do think there's a problem with gun violence here in Alaska, we'd like to convene our own thought leaders and come up with our own resolutions. And, oh, by the way, they may or may not include more school resource officers, or they might include school resource officers that are armed and trained, or they might include a focus on mental health, or they may not. And so I think that's what she's making the point of, is that it's easy to pick out one statement or another and say, well, why don't you agree with this statement? And I don't think at all that Representative Millett is saying that she doesn't care about more resource officers in schools. That's not the point. The point is that she wants the state of Alaska to make a collective statement that we disagree that the federal government and the President of the United States should be telling us how we address the issue of guns in our state. And I agree with that. And I think it's part and parcel, and it's all in one package, no different than we have a task force report that we adopt or don't, or we make an energy policy or an omnibus package and we put it forward. It's a collective statement of our beliefs. And so I support it.
So probably what I'll do at this point, because really I wanted the bill introduced to us. It was not with the intention of taking action today. And so what I will do is I'll bring this back up on Wednesday. And if there's amendments, we can debate them at that time. Obviously, I think the resolution itself has some pretty good support, but obviously there's some points that we will have to argue. So
and I'll just say, Mr. Chair, I agree with, and this is the thing that sort of perplexed me, was because I agree with your resolve. It's just when I go, and that's why I asked you the first question was, are you asking for a rescission of all 23 executive orders? If you're asking for a rescission of the ones that deal with limiting Second Amendment rights, I agree with you 100%. What I don't agree is on mental health, for instance. I think we should be having more discussion on mental health. I think we should be having more discussion on hiring school resource officers and emergency response plans for churches and schools. I think those are good things. I don't think we'd want to send a message from the state of Alaska that those are bad things, because I think most Alaskans agree those are good things. That's all I'm saying. Maybe a simple tweak on the title is the way to solve this, Mr. President. Mr.
It may very well be, and that's why I wanted to go ahead and bring it up, have you introduce it.
Yeah. Chairman Coghill, the reason the 23 executive orders is in there, the number 23, is because that is exactly how many are in the packet that the President. If we say executive orders, it means all executive orders that he's ever issued. So we're trying to be specific to the gun control measures that he's taking. And with all due respect, Senator Wilkowski, I would support a resolution if you wanted to put one in on mental health and the things that you agree with in that. I would be more than welcome to work with you on a resolution that says we support these things that are good. But all in all, federal overreach is just amazing. It is phenomenal on what the federal government thinks that they can do and tell us as a state and as citizens of this state when, where, and how we should control guns. And that's the message we're sending.
So, Representative, I take it that they come as a package then?
Through the chair, yes.
All right. Okay, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at this resolution, we're obviously concerned about federal overreach. We don't like federal overreach. But I think the resolution also has overreaching that you're condemning all 23 executive orders. I happen to agree with Senator Wilikowski over there that there are some executive actions that are there that should be actually supported. And so I think we're in danger of going down that route if we try and do. And so it's not that I'm saying that we shouldn't be doing something about the Second Amendment issue. But I tend to agree with Senator Wilikowski that there are some good things in amongst them. It may be hard to find, but there are some good things.
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, if you read through the resolution, we point out in each one of our statements, you know, why we oppose each one of the things that we oppose in the resolution. We do acknowledge that mental health should be something that it should be looked at. It's not condemning everything the president's doing. What we're saying is just that, you know, when you issue 23 executive orders or actions or whatever recommendations that you're doing, you're taking, while they may be good and while they may be right, that is our decision to make. That is our conversation to have, not President Obama, not, you know, members of Congress for the state of Alaska. It's our decision. It's our discussions. It's our desire to make up our own recommendations. And they may include some of the president's recommendations. They may not.
Last comment, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I just want to thank you for bringing it up.
Thank you.
I think Senator McGuire had one last question. This has taken a little longer than I had anticipated. However, Senator McGuire, did you have?
Yeah. So, through the chair, I guess my question for the bill or the resolution sponsor, this recommendation, the 23rd recommendation that we've been talking about, launch a national dialogue led by Secretaries Sivilis and Duncan on mental health, is the concern that you have that, and you stated you would support Senator Wilikowski. Let's say Senator Wilikowski put a resolution in that said, you support the idea of discussing mental health. Is the concern that you have that it's in the context of gun control and that the dialogue then, because it's part of this package, would necessarily lead to a discussion about how to limit those rights, perhaps of those that have mental health issues?
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, everything that's in this package is about limiting gun control and about finding a way, and I believe that because we've seen other bills go through Congress, and again, No Child Left Behind, we all thought it was great until we got in the meat and the potatoes of it, and then it became this issue is we should be prepared to make sure that Alaska is heard, that when things happen like that, we're part of the conversation. It doesn't say that Senator Murkowski or that you or I are in this conversation. It says it's on a national level, which leaves us out of that conversation. Yeah. So absolutely. Yeah. Everything in the package is talking about gun control, whether it's on the phase of mental health, whether it's on, you know, school resource officers, it's all working towards one issue, and that is gun control.
Yeah. All right. We've almost debated the bill to the length that I had expected before.
Just make one last point if I could.
Okay. One last point. I gave an hour for testimony, which means we're going to run
my
over.
Apologies. My last point is that I think I would, I'm going to talk to the bill sponsor, but I might offer an amendment that says, has issued these 23 executive orders under the now is the time resolution or something. So in other words, maybe that'll help people understand. I'll look at the language with you.
Yeah, I would encourage you to go ahead and talk with the bill sponsor. Those of you who have concerns, bring it back before us on Wednesday. We'll amend it, and we probably won't have near the dialogue that we had today because I think we probably uncovered some of the issues. And thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, Chairman.
We're going to set this bill aside for further action on Wednesday. House Bill 69 came before us, and at this point I had Mr. Dial, Lieutenant Dial, who was going to he was there to ask questions. I was going to have some public testimony on this on Wednesday as well. Was there any questions today that we needed to ask Lieutenant Dial?
Mr. Chair, Did we get a walkthrough on the bill, section by section? Because there were some parts of the CS that I didn't fully comprehend.
All right.
And I don't know. I know you got a lot of people signed up for testimony. I don't want to delay.
Yeah, let's
hold up. So maybe another time's appropriate.
Why don't you spend? We went through it, and we brought out what the newest CS had in it the last go around, and there were some questions I thought that maybe Mr. Dial could Lieutenant Dial could bring up. But if not, what I would do is I recommend that you get together with both the Speaker's office and my office. And we can go through that section by section with you. And I think I have a brand new sectional that my staff can get to you that kind of shows what we did. We took some of the nullification language from my bill. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. With your permission, I'd like to ask Lieutenant Dial some questions.
Yes.
Lieutenant Dial, as usual, I appreciate your helping us out. We sometimes feel badly that we divert you probably from more important things. As the bill, last version of the bill, do you see anything here that would cause problems for you and fellow public safety officers from in performing their duty?
For the record, my name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with the State Troopers stationed in Ketchikan. The department has reviewed the CS, and we do not have any concerns with the changes. We do not see any problems if that legislation were to pass.
Thank you, sir.
Right. Thank you.
Senator Wilkowski.
Hi, Ronnie. Good to hear from you, Lieutenant Dial. And did you have any concerns? I know there's still some discussion about we use this version or the other version. Did you have any concerns with the original version of the bill as it came to the Senate?
Through the chair, well, there was some initial discussion on how we would address violations by federal officers of the prior version of the bill. And we were able to work those out. Essentially, if the prior version had become law, we would have investigated that violations as we do any other violation of law, and would have just referred those to the Department of Law for review and prosecution. Other than that, sir, we have no other concerns with the bill.
Mr. Dow, thank you very much for coming before the committee. It's my intention to hold this over because I know there were some people that wanted to do public testimony on it on Wednesday. So unless the sponsor has anything else at this point, I think this is our opportunity to get Lieutenant Dial on the phone. So thank you very much for coming before the committee, and my apologies for running us a little bit late. With that, we're going to go over to the testimony that I promised on Senate Joint Resolution number 9. And I have the sponsor of the bill before us. Part of the issue was that I was going to go ahead and bring public testimony before us today. Excuse me. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have people go through this at 3-minute increments. And here's kind of how I thought I would handle it, the committee, unless you have some other suggestions. I wanted to hear the public testimony as much as I could today and Wednesday. And if I run short on time, then I would probably put it into an evening testimony time on Thursday night. Only trouble is, and I'll just say this for all listening, that is the night that I invited my wife to Juneau to celebrate our 38th wedding anniversary. So I might have to ask somebody else to handle the gavel and take the public testimony. That's my excuse for what it's worth. So
accepted.
But if we run into a time problem, we may very well be able to get public testimony done today and Wednesday. And handle these other bills. My expectation is the previous bill will have an amendment and we'll be able to move it along pretty good. I would encourage you all to be prepared for the House Bill 69 as well movement on Wednesday. All right. With that, I have we'll go to the Anchorage Legislative Office first, as they were the ones that got shortchanged last time, probably the most, so we'll take the first three testifiers there. We have David Neese in the Anchorage Legislative Office. Can you hear us? And if you're there, why don't you give us your public testimony?
Yeah, hi. David Neese, speaking for myself in Anchorage. 28-year teacher in the Anchorage School District. I sent a copy of Day 48 to Mr. Dunleavy's legislative aide, kind of as a homework assignment. Being a teacher, we do that stuff. I would like to bring a couple things out of Day 48. We have the education stuff coming up in front of the Alaska Constitution, and you have President Egan presiding. And the first thing they do is they talk about how they drafted the legislation, and it was in small subcommittees of three each, and they would go over the documents word by word. And one of the first questions to come up was from a Representative Robertson. He wanted to know, does the word private mean parochial? And the back-and-forth discussion between President Egan and Robertson was, yes, it does, and that's why we have private and religious in there, is so that there's no confusion as to, we understand that you have to have the two separate. And then when you get a little further into the discussion, they're going back and forth about direct and indirect. But one of the things they allowed in was a letter from a Mr. Don M. Defoe, Commissioner of Education. And he did not like the language the committee had suggested, and he came up with 7 points. But one of the ones that is most interesting is on page 3. And he says, it was not intended and does not prohibit the contracting or giving of services to the individual child for that child benefits as part of the society. This section gives the education department or other departments the right to seek out the child, independent of his religious affiliation, to help him to become a strong and useful part of society, wherein it touches health and matters of private welfare. We would point out, in the light of the letters that come to the floor relevant to the disbursement of funds to the denominational and other private institutions, this does not prohibit the use of funds in other educational matters. So here you have the Commissioner of Education saying, we're not going to get in the way of funds going to children's education, regardless of where they're at, if they are in a church, if they are out privately. I think this is a good idea to have that. Now, Mr. Fisher responded, and he did not like the fact that the language in this section was different than in Section 7, where they're talking about finance. And he did not know why they would have the third sentence in Section 1. And that's the big article of contention in this particular resolution, is that third sentence. So three times during the debate on that day, we have motions. The final motion was just to strike the third sentence, which is exactly what this constitutional amendment does. It strikes the third sentence. Now, that was 1957. That was 56 years ago. And the main thing that he came back to in his argument in closing was that, I would like to add, Mr. President, well, that while this Commissioner Defoe points out education is an important field, I do not feel that when it comes to the appropriation of public funds, it should receive any special, either more restrictive or more favored treatment. The fact that it has left itself open to this kind of interpretation, therefore, it seems to favor treatment of discriminatory treatment of this education section. What are we going to do with it when it comes to health, welfare, and anything else? I think public purpose provision should be the only guidance when it comes to appropriating public funds. So when you're looking at this on the legislative committee and you're looking at the constitutional amendment, this is exactly where it needs to be. We need to visit this. This is not 1957. Things have changed. In fact, the public purpose is what has probably changed. We are now doing things to a good public purpose to get education out there in all aspects. And by eliminating that third sentence, one that was debated for about 9 pages on Day 48, you can eliminate this problem of that has manifested itself over the last 50 years in funding. So I am in favor of doing this constitutional amendment. I think that it will serve the public purpose to put it in there. And I really think a heartfelt year and a half discussion out in public and how to manifest itself is appropriate after it moves out of the committee and moves out into the public for public discussion. And we can even have that conversation about whether we want to include the word parochial or private in there, because that seems to be the biggest argument for or against this, not the public purpose of a well-educated citizen in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, David. A little bit longer than I'd anticipated, but I didn't know where to interrupt you on that. But you kind of set the stage, so it's going to be awful hard for me to have people clip down to 3 minutes after that. So we're gonna plow through this. I have Jerry Covey also in Anchorage.
Good afternoon, Chairman Coghill and members of the Judiciary Committee. My name is Jerry Covey. I'm an education and nonprofit consultant, a former Alaska Commissioner of Education, former school district superintendent, principal, and teacher in Alaska's public education system. I'm here to testify on my own behalf in favor of SJR 9. I previously submitted written testimony on this to your committee, so my comments will be brief. First, I want to restate that I believe that public funds should only be used for public outcomes. In my view, any organization that accepts public dollars must abide by statutes and regulations governing public schools. Second, as a career educator, I'm aware that some professional groups strongly oppose SJR 9. While I can appreciate that they see SJR 9 as a threat to public education, I see this issue quite differently. In my view, the public education system belongs to the public, and the voice who own the education system should be given priority over the voice of those who operate the system. I support giving a voucher to all children in Alaska and letting the parents decide where to use it, as long as it goes to a school that complies with education statutes and regulations. Education interest groups are well organized and better prepared to influence the legislative process than the public at large. If SJR 9 fails at the legislative level, the public will be denied their voice. This is not the first time Alaska has encountered resistance to changes in our public education system that have proven beneficial. Looking back, I recall that some professional education groups who operate our public schools strongly opposed the creation of education standards that we now consider the foundation of our school system. It took significant engagement from the public to override the internal opposition and move the standards forward. I believe the public deserves that level of engagement on this issue. SJR 9 is not a silver bullet, but it does represent an opportunity to engage the public in making some revisions to our education system that will translate to better opportunities for parents and students. I believe strongly in the wisdom and will of the public. I ask that you advance SJR 9 to give the public their rightful opportunity to decide this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry, and thank you for the work you've done in education in Alaska. Greatly appreciated. We also have in the Anchorage Legislative Office, David Boyle.
Chairman Coghill, committee members, I'm David Boyle, and I'm representing the Alaska Policy Forum. We support SJR 9 because it will lead to better education outcomes for Alaskan children. It will loosen the grip of special interests on education. Education is the only monopoly in Alaska. We don't have the Alaska Fishing Company. We don't have the Alaska State Mining Company. And we don't have the Alaska State Petroleum Company. The Blaine Amendment language in the Alaska Constitution has a very sordid history. It is one of anti-Catholic, anti-Irish, and anti-immigrant background, of which I am all three. In the early 1900s, it was even supported by the Ku Klux Klan, something not to be proud of. Alaska is better than that. And for more in-depth information on the Blaine Amendment, you can go to our website, where we have a video on it. This is a battle between those who support the right of parents to choose the best education fit for their child and those who want to maintain their stranglehold on Alaska education to the detriment of many Alaskan children. This is about power and control, no doubt about it. Here's what Bob Channon, the general counsel for the NEA for 41 years, said in his farewell speech in 2009, quote, "It is not because of our creative ideas. It is not because of the merit of our positions. It is not because we care about children. And it is not because we have a vision of a great public school for every child. NEA and its affiliates are effective advocates because we have power. And we have power because there are more than 3.2 million people who are willing to pay us hundreds of millions of dollars in dues each year," end quote. I would like to note that the NEA Alaska does not represent the voice of all teachers. The NEA Alaska has collected more than $5.6 million in dues for this current school year. As you well know, that is power and influence. But the NEA only speaks for itself and what benefits its members. It does not speak for the children of Alaska. You see, the children of Alaska do not pay dues to the NEA Alaska. Not yet. Some have said that allowing Alaskans to vote on this constitutional amendment is a lousy idea. Was the PFD a lousy idea? Was lowering the voting age to 18 a lousy idea? I don't think so. That is why our Constitution has provisions for amending the document. There is a process, and the people play a large part in that. Today, my kids can get an Alaska Performance Scholarship and go to any school of higher learning, as long as it is in Alaska. They can go to APU or even the Alaska Bible College with public funds. If they can do that, why can't I choose the best K-12 education fit for my child? Finally, it's time to rid our Constitution of its discriminatory language. Some states have already done so. Most states simply ignore their Blaine Amendment language. We have a process in our Constitution that includes the people of the great state of Alaska. It is our right to vote on constitutional amendments. Do not deny us that right. The NEA does not own Alaska's Constitution. We, the people, own the Constitution. Give me and all Alaskans the freedom to exercise our vote. This is an historic battle. On one side, we have the people and their children. On the other side, we have powerful moneyed special interests. Many times, we hear that special interests control our destiny. Do not let special interests control our children's destinies. You have the power to let the people vote. We need to align the Alaska Constitution with the U.S. Constitution. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak on this extremely important issue. The future of Alaska is in your hands. I will provide a record copy of the policy forum's position on SJR 9.
Thank you, David. Tom Think, if you're there. In fact, I'm going to go to Tom and then Vic Fisher. Then I'm going to go over to a couple of off-net to kind of skip around Alaska a little bit. So, Tom?
This is Senator Coghill, members of the committee. I'm representing myself. I guess in the interest of disclosure, I will say I'm on a board of a private K-12 school in the Anchorage area. And I'm also active in a volunteer task force supporting this legislation. I'll ask the committee to please pass SJR 9 out, allow the public to decide the issue, do not allow the NEA leadership to deny the people the opportunity to make this all-important decision. The inadequate K-12 education situation we currently have cannot be solved without this amendment. Give us, the public, the power to make the decision at the polls. Now, the sponsor of this resolution put out a packet which was very informative. Among other things, he pointed out the many areas in which state money is currently spent for private education that, as Mr. Comer, who testified for this committee earlier, said they would not stand the muster of a constitutional challenge in court. But there's so many organizations, I think I counted about 15 different labor organizations that receive money for their education programs. We can clear it all up by passage of this amendment. I request that you move it out and allow the public the right to make the final decision. I'm giving some of your time back, Senator Coghill.
Mr. Fink, and thank you for all your public service to our wonderful state. Mr. Fisher.
The chairman.
And,
My name is Victor Fisher. I was a delegate to Alaska's Constitutional Convention. I've been quoted here. I was served in the territorial legislature and in the state senate. I do oppose SJR 9, the proposed constitutional amendment that would provide public funds for religious and other private educational institutions. I was quoted as having been in favor of eliminating the section that this amendment proposes to get rid of, which says no money shall be paid from public funds for the direct benefit of any religious or other private educational institution. In principle, I opposed it back in the Constitutional Convention days in 1955-56, and I oppose it today. The provision of funding for, am I making that banging noise?
Yeah, that's, you must be very close to the mic, Vic.
I am close to the mic. I just want to be get close to you and the committee members. but the, what I'm trying to say is that I opposed the concept of public funding of private educational institutions, including religious institutions. And the quotation of me had more to do with where the prohibition was than whether to fund private and religious educational institutions. There was no objection during the Constitutional Convention to having this language in the Constitution, because it was the principle that was involved of what constitutes the public interest, what constitutes use of public funds for public purposes. And that's really my basic concern here, that eliminating...
You're fading just a little bit, Vic. Why don't you get a little closer to that mic now, even if it pops.
Okay. Eliminating the third sentence and the first paragraph, and then going to the finance article and adding the additional language. In effect, what it takes away any kind of limitation, constitutional limitation, on putting public money into private and religious, including religious institutions. And that's where my concern is, that this leaves the door completely open. If you left the Section 1 language as it is, the education language, and then amended the public purpose article, that might, I think, achieve the aim that most of the people who've spoken in favor are after, and that is benefit the individual child. And that is what was accepted at the Constitutional Convention. But if you take away the provision against public funding for the direct benefit of religious and other institutions, combined with the amendment to the finance article, then you do have the gates wide open for any aspect through the students to provide money for the direct benefit of educational, of religious educational, as well as private educational, other private educational institutions. And that is what totally bothers me, is the combination that just leaves it wide open to subsequent abuse. So I very much oppose SJR 9 as it is.
Thanks for coming out to testify. Senator Bulikowski has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not too often. I can't imagine there's very many states in the country where you get the people who actually wrote the Constitution in to testify about it. But there's been some testimony that this is actually a discriminatory provision. I think the words were that it was anti-Catholic, anti-Irish, anti-immigrant. It was something that was pushed by the KKK. Is that your recollection of how this amendment was adopted?
No, that's pure nonsense. It's totally irrelevant. It was not never even thought of in those terms. The I don't want to get into the ethnic and religious membership of the Constitutional Convention. We had lots of Catholics there. We had lots of free thinkers of all sorts. Nobody was discriminating against anybody. This was language that most of the states had, most of the states have, and this is the language in there was in accordance with the general approach of my Constitutional Convention colleague pointed this out in his strong arguments in behalf of having the word indirect added to not having public funds go for the direct or indirect benefit of religious and other private educational institutions. And he was not proposing to discriminate against anyone. He just wanted to have a very clear delineation between public institutions and non-public institutions, and he didn't even want indirect. And his argument in part was that parents can make the choice. They can make the choice of going with the public institution or putting their children in parochial school or any other private educational institution. It was just a matter of the public fund aspects, not having people's tax money, public tax money, go directly or indirectly even for the benefit of religious institutions. And it was not meant to be discriminatory. It's never been discriminatory. One of the arguments that's been made in behalf of this amendment is that there's public money already going for the benefit of students in various ways. Well, if that's already taking place, if that hasn't even been challenged, we don't need this amendment if we can deal with the basic needs that may exist in behalf of students rather than institutions.
Thank you, Vic, and thank you for your service to Alaska, long-time service, and I know that working with many legislators and a long-time friend with my own dad, so thank you very much for taking time. I have one person that called in and said they had a time constraint, so I'm going to go to them and then over to the off-net. So Dan Kennedy called and said there was a time constraint, so you're at the Matsu LIO. Dan, can you hear us?
Yes, very well. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes. Please put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Yes. Yes, my name is Dan Kennedy. I'm a certified public accountant in Wasilla. I'm going to testify on behalf of my wife, Janet, and myself. We're both CPAs here in Wasilla. Greetings to the Honorable Chairman Coghill and McGuire. My testimony will be less than 3 minutes. I have a unique testimony that I want to share with the committee. First, I want to give brief background. I want to make my point. And then I want to make myself available if you have any questions regarding my unique testimony. Our three kids were all public schools. They graduated valedictorian Wasilla High School in 2009, 10, and 12. Our three kids are now at the U.S. Military Academies. Two are in Annapolis, and our daughter's at the United States Air Force Academy, Colorado Springs. I'm mentioning this simply as background, not to be boastful, but this is a unique Alaskan case study that I want the committee to hear. The most important thing, and I'll speak directly about the United States Naval Academy since we have two children in Annapolis, the most important thing to get into the Naval Academy is SAT scores. You also have to be successful with difficult high school classes like AP Chem, Calculus, and Physics. Our kids competed against 20,000 young Americans throughout the country, and the U.S. Naval Academy selects about 1,200 each year for the class. USNA is the hardest college in America to get accepted to, even more so than a pair of the Ivy League schools in Stanford. In our opinion, competition with education is imperative. We support the opportunity for Alaskans to change the Constitution to allow for choices, including private education. Our kids competed against many midshipmen that were accepted from private high schools across the country that very specifically groom the high school students to attend military academies. And accordingly, because of the trend of public school is mediocrity rather than excellence to prepare for such elite colleges, we're advocating for this constitutional amendment. Our children were involved in ELP, extended learning programs through elementary and middle school in public schools here in the Matsu Borough. Those programs have been eliminated, and we fully understand why, because of budget constraints and other requirements of public education. However, to continue with Alaskans to be able to compete with some of the America's finest headed to military academies, we feel that options must be available to these gifted kids. That ends my testimony as I advocate for you to please support the joint resolution and pass it out of your committee. I'm available for any questions regarding my unique testimony.
Dan, thank you very much. Senator Wilkowski has a question for you.
Where did you say your kids went to school, sir?
My son David is graduating May 24th from United States Naval Academy in Annapolis. I also have a plebe there, a freshman, and a daughter at Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs.
Yeah, thank you for their service and their dedication to our country. Where did they go to school here in Alaska?
Wasilla High School.
So they did all that going through a public school? That's pretty good.
And I wanted to reemphasize, if I could, that what really set them up for their futures at elite colleges was this extended learning program in elementary school and in middle school. In fact, they crossed the street as eighth graders over to the high school to take geometry at the high school level, which allowed them to take calculus A, B, and BC, if you're familiar with those two AP classes of calculus.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony, and very, very nice to hear that success story. I'm going to go to OffNet over to Sharon Aubrey right now. Sharon, are you online?
Yes, sir.
Why don't you go ahead and give us your testimony, identify yourself.
All right, thank you. My name is Sharon Aubrey, and I've been homeschooling for 8 years through a statewide correspondence program. As a parent educator, I have many barriers to fulfill my children's IOPs because of constitutional language interpretations. These restrictions hinder many public school students from obtaining the flexibility in curriculum or courses necessary to achieve their academic and career goals. Senator Dunleavy mentioned the calculator issue briefly on Friday, but this is a critical issue impacting thousands of our public school students and affects more than just calculators. Currently, if my daughter has an algebra class listed on her IOP and I purchase a sectarian textbook which best meets her learning style, her allotment will not pay for the scientific calculator. However, if I buy a secular textbook, the same calculator can be purchased. Obviously, the calculator has no religious preference. It's simply a tool for mathematical instruction. But by current interpretation, Alaska's Department of Ed says it violates the Constitution by supporting religion to purchase this calculator. The interpretation also affects every other subject and limits our students' abilities to obtain microscopes, chemistry sets, physics materials, art supply, and many more academic necessities. These same materials are used daily in our brick-and-mortar schools, yet they are denied to other public school students in an alternative program simply because they are used in conjunction with a sectarian textbook. In addition, core courses with a faith basis purchased by parents are not allowed to be considered for enrollment purposes, even though these curriculums meet and exceed the state standards and grade level expectations. Our students are penalized having to enroll in two math, two science, two literature, and two history courses, with one of each being secular just because of this constitutional interpretation. Parents like me are struggling trying to meet the needs of our child's public school education. And I'm not necessarily asking the state to purchase faith-based curriculums, but I am asking for a change in the language of the Constitution that will allow flexibility to have courses that meet state GLEs recognized for enrollment. And I am asking for the basic supporting materials required for general education, such as the calculator and microscopes, to be made available. I'd like to ask for your support for SJR 9 because I believe it will solve the limitations and problems currently facing our public educational system and give us better educational options, curriculums, and materials for our students to succeed. Thank you very much.
Sharon, thank you very much for taking time to come and testify before the committee. Greatly appreciated. I'm going to go to the Kenai Legislative Office, and Sammy Crawford is on. Sammy, can you hear us?
Yes, thank you. And thank you for taking my testimony.
Get up close to that mic.
Sammy Crawford. I'm sorry?
Yeah, there you go. You're a little distant to the mic.
Okay, so here I go. I'm Sammy Crawford. I'm a 45-year resident of Alaska, 30 years as a classroom teacher, and 15 years on the Board of Education. I am very pleased to be able to give testimony on SJR 9. I do believe that it needs to be fully vetted. I'd really like to see this bill, the SJR 9, go to the Education Committee. It is an education issue that needs to be fully explored. My take is that I have strong reservations about opening this door without fully exploring what the impact could be. It's not enough to say we'll deal with that when it's time. I really believe we need to answer those questions now. Changing the Constitution should be a careful and well-thought-out exercise of those 28 amendments. Many were related to the permanent fund, limited entry. The last time it was amended was 9 years ago. The voters are asked every 10 years whether or not they want a constitutional convention to get major changes. Since statehood, they have said no. I also am a public education advocate. Our school district has charter schools. We have 43 schools. We have alternative schools. We have a homeschool program. It's my belief that the pie of financial assistance to public schools is only so large, and to divide it smaller would make it more difficult for public education. Thank you.
Sammy, thank you very much for taking your time to not only listen in but give us your thoughtful comments. I greatly appreciate it. We're going to go to Connie Bell in Petersburg. Connie, are you on?
Yes, I am, and thank you very much. I really appreciate this opportunity to voice my opinion. My name is Connie Bell. I'm from Petersburg, and I'm a homeschooling mom. And because of that, I've always taken a great, well, not just because of that, but as a homeschooling mom, I've always taken that responsibility of my children's education seriously. I don't think anything's as dear to a parent's heart than the welfare and well-being of their children. And ultimately, I believe the responsibility of choosing the best education possible for Alaska's children lies first with their parents. A chance to vote on our Constitution concerning this matter would begin the process of giving Alaskans that freedom. And we know that competition has always been good for encouraging excellence and better stewardship of finances and resources. and we know that freedom produces prosperity. So I say let's not be afraid to give Alaskans the freedom to choose the very best they can for their children. And that's simply what I have to say on this issue, and I'm for putting that amendment on the ballot in 2014. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for taking the time to call in, Connie, and I appreciate it. Next, I'm going to go to Soldotna to Mary, and if I mess up your name, just correct me. It looks like Totonji. Just go ahead and say it one more time and come on, give us your testimony, Mary.
Thank you. My name is Mary Totonji, and I have been a public school educator as a speech-language pathologist for 25 years, and then went into private practice with speech-language, and have very strong feelings towards public education. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak before this committee. In our state and federal constitutions, the concept of separation of church and state is mandated. The concept of public education available to all is also mandated. For members of our legislature in the state of Alaska to deny both these concepts is a slap in the face to both our constitutions and those who produce them. SJR 9 denies both these concepts, to take public monies from public education and place it in the hands of religious propagation and or private entities with no obligations for effective programming, testing, or oversight is a travesty. To demand criteria for public schools that is not demanded for others who wish to use public education funds is a travesty. To place no requirements on accepting students who may be challenged by physical, environmental, or other attributes, denies the very substance of education, let alone public education. I respect religious beliefs, but I do not wish to have my state funding these beliefs and denying the rights of other children to be educated through reduced funding. There is a consistent pattern represented by this resolution. It reduces funding to schools already stressed by reductions in funding, as evidenced by not increasing the per-student allocation in the last few years to keep up with inflation and the needs of a populace that finds itself reduced in circumstances. This resolution makes it impossible to make long-term plans to improve educational goals by reducing public school funding by an indefinite and inconsistent sum, even on a yearly basis. I believe that one of the single most effective ways to maintain a viable government for the people and a viable country is to provide a strong educational base. This base provides an educated workforce available to business. This resolution is ship jobs overseas or to the lower 48. No education, no jobs, no work. A real loss for Alaskans. Leave our Constitution alone. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you very much for taking the time to testify and sticking with us. We're going to go over to the Mat-Su LIO to Mike Coons. And then we're going to go back to the Anchorage LIO. So, Mike?
Yes, Senator Coghill and members. My name is Mike Coons from Lazy Mountain, and I'm speaking for myself. I've sent you a written copy of my testimony. I'd like to revise and extend my remarks, please.
All right.
I support SJR 9, and unlike the previous speaker, I fully oppose the notion of separation of church and state, since it is being made a premise of opposition to SJR 9. The First Amendment clearly states, quote, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of a religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, end quote. By giving parents the right to have their children in a school of their choice, be it public, secular private, or religious private, the state of Alaska is not establishing a religion to get an education. As argued many times, vouchers will be invoked. As Senator Dunleavy has stated time and again, if the legislature wanted to do that, you could now, with a simple majority vote, pass that. So let's lay that red herring to rest. Our history of schools have ranged from parents requiring their children to read the great thinkers, Socrates, Pluto, Black's Law, etc., to our present-day compulsory schooling. The greatest minds of our history, Jefferson, Madison, Adams, Hamilton, had no formal schooling until into their teens. Those homeschoolers then went on to write the three greatest documents of all time, the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. The following statement I'm going to give you is from Wikipedia.com on the history of education, and will refute one of the previous speaker's comments. In the early 1800s, the nation was mainly Protestant. Then most existing states and new states coming into the Union passed the so-called Blaine Amendments forbidding tax money to be used to fund parochial schools. This was from an anti-Catholic sentiment related to heavy immigration from the Catholic Ireland after the 1840s and a feeling that Catholic children should be educated in public schools to become American. Of note, it was to become American, not to stop religious beliefs. Then in 1925, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Pierce versus Society of Sisters that students could attend private schools to comply with state compulsory education laws, thus giving parochial schools an official blessing. In public testimony, learned professors testified to a joint committee that states that Wisconsin and even the District of Columbia have shown great improvement by giving parents choices outside of public education. In point of fact, the testimony was that the underprivileged were the vast majority who moved out of public schools and into private schools, with immediate and long-lasting increases in learning and graduation rates. From a financial standpoint, this helped public schools, and overall, a rising tide lifts all by giving parents and children a choice in their education. Sadly, I only have 3 minutes, but I hope this will help in your decision process to pass SJR 9 so that we the people can debate, learn, and then vote on this important matter.
Thank you very much, Mike, for taking the time to come out and testify. And folks, we are going to run out of time today, but I'm going to get the last two in the Anchorage Legislative Office. We got Jane Angrick and Vic Chican, is it? So, Jane, are you there?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jane Angrick. I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I have had the opportunity to oppose the constitutional amendment before you and encourage you not to pass it out of the committee. I believe that the prohibition on the use of public funds for private and religious education is appropriate in the state constitution and should be retained. Like some of you, I've served in local government and had the opportunity to both create tax structures that impose taxes on people and appropriate funds for the functioning of the government. And I believe that in your consideration of this bill, you are not just saying, oh, let the people vote. You are actually required to use your judgment on whether or not this is a good idea. That's why there's a two-thirds requirement, a two-thirds bar for the consideration by the legislature, that it has to really be a good idea. Therefore, I encourage you to consider what the financial obligations to the state government are for including the opportunity of public funding to go for private or religious education. It's currently estimated there are some 9,600 students in private schools in Alaska today. If we're adding those students to the education budget, are we prepared for what the financial cost will be? I believe that you have the responsibility to look at what the financial costs to the public sector are to be able to provide those kinds of dollars to a private or religious education. In conclusion, I oppose the development of this constitutional amendment and encourage you as legislators to take very serious consideration of the content and the ramifications of this application should it come into being. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you for taking time to testify. Moving right along then, Vicki, are you there in Anchorage?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Speak up, identify yourself, and give us your testimony.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Vicki Chuck, and I'm a U.S. citizen living by choice in the state of Alaska. I'm a former homeschooling parent, but have been a part of the primary and secondary schools here in Anchorage for the past decade. I'm testifying on behalf of myself in support of SJR 9. The issue set before this committee of the first session of the 28th legislature is to deeply ponder the implications of a change to the Constitution of the state of Alaska and to decide whether to put to a vote by the people they represent a constitutional amendment regarding the fundamental basis that delineates the use of public funding toward education. This is by no means a trivial contemplation and should be considered with the most humble and sensitive approach, understanding from where the original language was derived and examining the historical interpretation against universal principles, not the flavor of the day controversy. I trust that each of you as public servants impacting future generations into perpetuity will not be swept by the current special interests of personal benefit, but rather base your vote on solid factual information provided from many sources, seeing this from a purely objective vantage point. The following history of religion intended in the education sphere, along with excerpts from the Alaska Constitutional Convention, can provide context for your determination. It is incumbent upon you to seek the truthful basis upon which your ultimate vote is made. Excerpted from Klanskusen's The Making of America, The Substance and Meaning of the Constitution, the First Amendment's origin is described from the perspective of ideological intent and practical application. Quoting the opening section, "This provision that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof guaranteed to all Americans the right to enjoy the free exercise of religion of their choice without the government giving any preference to one establishment or denomination over another." There was some concern among the founders lest this prohibition give the impression that the government was hostile to religion. They wanted it clearly understood that the universal self-evident truths of religion were fundamental to the whole structure of the American system. This is such an important aspect of the nation's original culture that a comprehensive discussion of religion from the founders' perspective might prove helpful. Alaskan Americans of the 20th and 21st centuries have a hard time fathoming the supreme importance which the founding fathers originally attached to the role of religion. They fail to realize that the founders felt the role of religion would be as important in our day as it was in theirs. In the Northwest Ordinance passed in 1787, the same body of Congress that approved the original U.S. Constitution emphasized the essential need to teach religion and morality in the schools. Here's the way they said it. "Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged." Notice that formal education was to include among its teaching responsibilities these three important subjects. Religion, which might be defined as a fundamental system of beliefs concerning man's origin and the relationship to the Creator, the cosmic universe, and his relationship with his fellow men. Morality, which may be described as a standard of behavior distinguishing right from wrong. Knowledge, which is an intellectual awareness and understanding of established facts relating to any field of human experience or inquiry. Having virtually no reference to atheism in the American colonies, which were established in large part to freely worship God as creator, religion was a given, a postulate, the challenge being that no single religion dominate as established to the suppression of all others, this being the essentiality of the First Amendment. That's how important this liberty was to the founding fathers, that it be first. Therefore, in supporting equality to all people after establishing that religion is the foundation of morality and that both are essential to good government and the happiness of mankind, the founders then set about to make the teaching of religion a unifying cultural adhesive rather than a divisive apparatus. There is more, much more, that you can learn if you choose to read the full section, which I will include for the documents for this bill. But the intent was clearly not to remove religion, but to have no one religious doctrine dominate over all of the people. However, the very political power that the founding fathers sought to contain in enumerated powers unleashed on the people over the course of a century when schooling for literacy was turned into scientific management of society. In order to do this, control was necessary, and that control was put in place through prescription of public funding. In the 1870s, a transition time between Southern Reconstruction policy to
enfranchise
the recently emancipated African Americans,
I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up.
Americanizing immigrants, especially Irish and German Catholics, for cultural homogeneity, and the need for a uniformly literate workforce for the impending industrial age, advancement of public schools put the control in the hands of the government. President Ulysses S. Grant, in a speech...
Vicki, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up. That's I am losing committee members, and if you have that in writing, please send that to the committee. I think that'll be good for backup. But I'm going to have to.
And it goes on to talk about the Blaine Amendment, and then on to address the Alaska Constitutional Convention, and bring that all together in support of SJR 9. May I read my closing paragraph? In closing, I hope you are in alignment with truth and justice as they pertain to providing equal opportunity for all of the people of Alaska and to allow them to determine the future of their government and their lives. You are representatives of the people and as such must do their will as stated in Article 1, Section 2 of the Declaration of Rights in the Constitution. All political power is inherent in the people. All government originates with the people, is founded upon their will only, and is instituted solely for the good of the people as a whole. I wish you peace and wisdom in your contemplation of this issue, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, and information you want to send to the committee. So I've got Amy, George, Candy, and Charles online. If when you call in next time you say that you had been left off, I will make sure that you're first up. My apologies. But my intention is not to close off public testimony and to include more public testimony on Wednesday. So with that, I'm very, very grateful for the people who have chimed in on this. Obviously, a big question mark, and we should consider it as deeply and thoughtfully as we can. I'm grateful for those who testified. Thank you, committee members, for staying a few minutes overboard. We will bring up this SJR 9 for public testimony. HB 69, we'll look at the resolution, HB 4. Hopefully pass out two of them and continue public testimony. We're adjourned. Thank you.